Welcome to The Ether. Today is Saturday, March 26, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Take advantage of their Terra Luna Intel report on Telegram, which brings you the hottest news and updates on all things Terra each and every day. Find it using the link in the show notes. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, Terabytes Weekend News. Let's take a listen.
I'll just get set up here. We'll start in a couple of minutes. Joseph, how you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing all right. Just letting people filter in here. Crazy, crazy week, huh?
Yeah, every week it's just getting harder and harder to just to filter down the news, just to kind of make the judgment call on what's more important to let people know about.
Yeah, I noticed you just like skip certain categories in your rundown. Like there's no way you can cover games and NFTs, for example.
Yeah, and so that was the goal of starting the weekly roundup with Hank for NFTs. So that will be coming soon. It's going to be just a NFT weekly roundup, just kind of covering all the metaverse projects in Terra.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Good morning. Beautiful morning here. Actually, not really. It's kind of cold, but I guess we'll get over it eventually. I just wanted to give a couple of housekeeping notes here before we dive into the news. There is a lot of really big news. We've got the jump prop for the BTC reserves. We've got ThorSwap live. We've got Anchor doing some different interest rates and adjustable interest rates. So I'm excited to talk about all this. We're also going to have at the end of the hour, we're going to have the guys from Cash hop up and talk a little bit about their proposal. If you missed it, we actually had an interview with who I can't even remember who they are. We had an interview with the guys who had the worst proposal ever, where they were like, just basically don't let anyone have 20% unless, you know, they know how to make multiple wallets. And Cash and those guys jumped on and kind of gave their perspective, which I thought was much more thoroughly thought out. And so they're going to come back on, talk about their proposal. If you haven't heard it, I think it's actually very interesting. It's a nice combination of creating some buying pressure for the ANC token, as well as, you know, helping sort of maximize the yield reserve and like make it a more sustainable product overall. So I'm excited to talk to them. I also just wanted to give a big shout out to the team over at Sigma. If you haven't heard of Sigma, they're building options vaults on top of Terra. We're doing a Bytes paper. I just finished reading it yesterday. So if you want to hear the smooth sounds of the voice of Pantera 0x reading you white papers while you do the dishes or mow the lawn, feel free to keep up with us on that, because this is legit. These guys are like all big brains, all TFL guys, or mostly TFL guys. It's going to be another really like an instant blue chip project, in my opinion. So keep your eyes peeled for the Sigma Bytes paper. We'll have an interview sort of to follow up with that. And they've got some, I see Jimmy here as well from Prism. And, you know, I was reading the Sigma Byte paper, and they've got some interesting dynamics that they might have poached from you guys with the amps. So stay tuned to see what their tokenomics model looks like, because it's pretty cool. Oh, Jimmy, you're up here. You're speaking. What's up?
Yo, what's up? I'm at the gym this morning, but just listening in to the smooth tones this morning.
Well, we appreciate that. Just doing some light housekeeping before we dive into the news. Again, let people file in. One other thing, actually two other things. The June DApp Expo, if you are interested, if you like to hear about dApps, if you like to interact with people IRL and not just be a picture of an animal on Twitter, and you want to see people's beautiful faces. I'm sure everybody in Web3 is actually way more beautiful in real life than they are on Twitter. You'd be shocked. It's like, I couldn't tell if I was at Fashion Week in Paris or if I was at a crypto conference. Every time I go, everybody's just so beautiful. That's going to be in June down in Austin, Texas. There is going to be a TeFi Alpha event similar to the one we did in New York. We will be live streaming that. We'll be hosting that. It's going to be, you know, basically, you know, all the projects that have big news, they're going to hold off until then, and they're going to announce then. So please be there in person. That's June 9th and 10th, and that's in Austin, Texas, the weekend before Consensus. And then one other thing I wanted to bring up while we're talking about random stuff, our friends over at One Planet right now, and I just noticed this last night, they're running this competition, a trade to win competition. And interestingly enough, it's like whoever trades the most volume will win in a 10-day period. But one of the things is Galactic Punks. And there's only three Galactic Punks that are like in anybody's price range. And so I feel like you could just buy one right now and get one free. So if you're an NFT fan or a Galactic Punk fan, I don't know. Well, how you couldn't take advantage of that? I mean, you just go buy one and then you'll get one for free. Basically, I don't know. I'll be interested.
Wait. So it's who trades, it's trading in that collection.
Yeah.
Like overall trading.
No, it's trading within that collection. But right now there's only three GPs for sale. And one of them is for like 10,000 Luna. So I feel like if you buy like the second most expensive one, which is, I don't know, maybe 60 Luna or something, you might guarantee yourself a free Galactic Punk. So, and it's like a decent one that they're giving away. So go over to oneplanetnft.io and check that out. All right, I'll stop talking and let Joseph help us dive into the news here.
Yeah, so this week's news, we're extremely busy. So the first one that I kind of wanted to cover and touch on is the integration with ThorChain. That has been a long time coming, and it's starting to get people's attention. ThorChain is the famous chain that is bringing the ability to have some more real use case assets. The technology is actually kind of crazy. I don't really know all the ins and outs of it, but it is a chain that is kind of seeking to bring decentralization to all assets, trying to get rid of centralized exchanges. And so the integration with ThorChain kind of just pushes that vision to the forefront. You're kind of just seeing how the prototypical technology is like coming together and fleshing with the Terra Luna vision. What are your guys' thoughts on ThorChain? Do you guys believe in this grand vision? I know that there were some security concerns maybe about a couple months ago involving ThorChain.
Yeah, at a high level, I think this is really where crypto. I don't think this is even just the future. I think this is where it has to go, and I'm not the only person that sees that. I think a lot of people see the writing on the wall with, the censorship of centralized exchanges. And I can't tell you how long we've heard about like shady things that go on with, you know, leverage and scam wicks. And, you know, it's like a joke that, it used to be Arthur Hayes doing scam wicks and now it's CZ doing scam wicks. And, for me, I know personally, like when I take profit, I don't take profit into cash. I take profit into like BTC. And so having something that I can just easily go in and basically, you know, let's just say like I'm taking profit in Luna and I'm going in and I can just natively, I mean, it's really slick. You can just natively go into your Terra Station wallet. You just connect your wallet like you would on any other Terra dApp. You punch in little, you know, whatever, like your Bitcoin wallet address, wherever you want the funds to go. And then it takes a very small fee based only on like the fees that you would otherwise pay in those networks. Now, I do think you might have to have some runes staked in order to do that, but correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I mean, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so Pete's done exactly this.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of swapping recently. And I mean, if I am wrong, then it's got to be a recent addition, because I was coming in and moving from Bitcoin to Rune, not financial advice, a little while ago. I didn't need any like destination Rune to do that. So I don't think you have to stake anything. Yeah, this is really smooth, and it's enabling a lot of. I don't know if you guys have seen Rango. I'll put up the Rango tweet. Rango is showing how many connections this now like enables, or at least enables easier. You can not just now go to Terra, you know, go from Bitcoin to Terra, but it enables a much easier transition to any Cosmos asset too. And I just threw this up here. Rango lets you basically see how to hop from one asset to another, and it'll like aggregate. And it's not a DEX aggregator. It's like a multi-hop kind of pieces together for you, shows you all the fees, warns you if Ethereum's involved so you don't pay a huge fee on the way. And even if you don't really like the idea of trusting Rango for some reason or another, you can at least figure out how to do swaps there. And so they've got, you know, now you can, it used to be very complicated to get from like Bitcoin natively to some other Cosmos asset. And now thanks to all these things plugging in like IBC, Osmosis, and like Thorchain, we're just one step closer to instantly being able to swap everything. So this is but for us here, lunatics, I mean, this is huge. Not only is it a new DeFi foray, which we're going to have our friend Danku here, who is on the stream, is going to be doing tonight a discussion of like impermanent loss and providing and like what that matters, you know, what you should think about impermanent loss and providing on Thorchain. I'll share the tweet right here in the space. So hop on over to that video tonight to see, you know, what's impermanent loss, what's impermanent loss protection, does it make sense? How do you avoid accidentally resetting your impermanent loss protection? All those things. And we don't really know what the rates are yet, I think, on UST and Luna, provision on Thorchain. If you want to go and check it out, providing, it's like a 7-day average, and we haven't even been up for 7 days. So I'm not sure what the rates are. Maybe someone could dive in and figure that out more. But it doesn't only just provide like a lot more DeFi opportunities where you can do, I mean, you can provide BTC Luna pair now, right? There provides a lot more DeFi opportunities.
That's awesome. It just
provides a lot more instant swaps. And we're going to see more and more applications. I can't wait till. There's some pressure for Luna to upgrade to IBC V2 too, but that's just like we're going to keep seeing IBC develop more and more and more. And I imagine that eventually it'll be like APIs are exposed, right? You can have Terra apps that just like integrate Bitcoin and use Bitcoin as if it were any other Terra asset, even though it's not like wrapped or you know what I mean? It's you can use your Bitcoin in your Terra app without having to go through some kind of special wrapping or Uniswap step. Danku messages me and says around 100% APY currently on Luna UST and encourages you guys all, or excuse me, on Luna Rune or UST Rune, something like that, and encourages you all to come and check out the video.
Yeah, from a DeFi perspective, I didn't even consider how this was going to make everything so much easier. Just in terms of being able to access other assets. And I figured that with the Osmosis integration, that this was kind of going to be, that was going to be the end all be all. But now witnessing Thorchain just kind of come online and just being able to use Bitcoin directly here. Yeah, you're exactly right. Now we have like kind of the principal asset that you want to be able to take profits in and to rotate. Do you think that there will be an integration of Bitcoin to the most common blue chip products in the Terra ecosystem? I know that the Anchor model is going to be slightly different, but do you ever see a point in time where we start listing Bitcoin as an asset that we can deposit and leverage?
Well, I mean, we've already got like deep integration plans, right? I mean, we've bought $1 billion of Bitcoin so far with Seniorage and other means through LFG.
and that's going to at least 10 billion. I guess we'll put it this way. 3 billion has been immediately allocated. 10 billion is planned to be allocated, but there could be much more later. So you can't really put a final number on how much Bitcoin will be like an emergency reserve for UST. But there's we have it now, 1 billion number. We'll have it. We already have it allocated, 3 billion number. We'll have it rather soon, 10 billion number. And we'll eventually have who knows how much, right? So we're already seeing this deep Bitcoin integration, and I don't see that happening without Terra apps and Terra developers becoming more interested in using Bitcoin throughout the ecosystem and finding other ways to unlock and utilize that.
So this little bit of conversation kind of plays in hand with the next news this week. Donku is also going to be doing a deep dive conveniently today, I believe, on this Agora proposal. So on this Agora proposal is coming from Jump, from the team over there at Jump Crypto. Yeah, Jump Crypto. And they have developed essentially the guidelines for how Terra and Terraform Labs and the LFG Foundation are going to be using Bitcoin and how they plan on deploying that, the on-chain reserve model. So this proposal goes into extreme amount of detail. It definitely is a big Giga Chad proposal that you have to kind of break down. So I'm actually really excited to watch Donku's breakdown of this, just to kind of get a little bit of more insights on what's going on behind the scenes. Because let's face it, this Bitcoin reserve is going to be huge for the entire direction of the ecosystem. And the way that the reserve is set up is going to be kind of a selling piece to most of the people who are really behind and bulls of Bitcoin. I know that I've been seeing a lot of the main influencers who kind of just show Bitcoin at this point are starting to open their eyes to Luna. And I have seen a couple where they were remaining to be skeptical. Despite this integration, despite these plans, and they kind of need to see what we're doing with the reserve and how that's actually going to work on chain.
I want to talk about this for actually a long time, and I don't want to talk about the specifics of the Jump proposal. We'll let Donku do that in a deep dive. But I do want to mention it's exogenous to Terra protocol. And that's important because one of the risks of this whole thing, right, is what if UST falls apart because there's a critical error in Terra, or for that matter, Cosmos. So people that are using UST, for example, on other chains, will want to have the confidence that they can still use this BTC outlet or some other mechanism, in order to escape if the Terra protocol falls apart. Now, we don't think that's very likely, but you've got to have your hedge outside of Terra protocol. So really excited to hear more about that, to read more about that. But I have some maybe unique insight into why we've got, I'm going to go ahead and let Inverser Millennial as speaker, but please don't, let me finish this topic first. So I used to work at Block One. I worked there for a short time. I basically saw there was no man behind the curtain, right? You kind of from the outside, I don't know if you're from crypto for a few years, then you've heard of EOS. And their EOS was launched, and there was a lot of activity initially from the community. And then the big company that did the ICO bought a lot of Bitcoin, bought at the time something like $4 billion of Bitcoin. Now that became roughly maybe $12 billion today. They hedged some out into dollars on the other side for liquidity and so on. So they have more Bitcoin than really almost anyone other than Grayscale today. They definitely have more than MicroStrategy. They definitely have more than Tesla, right? So they have this huge amount of Bitcoin. And people thought, of course they're going to develop the ecosystem. And I can't really speak to any details of anything going on or any motivations or anything like that. Of course, I work there and they have the best lawyers in the world. So I'm not going to get in trouble here. But people thought they were secret mega plans. And when I got there, I realized there were plans, sure, but there weren't really secret mega plans. And so I quickly left. There are other reasons, but I quickly left. And so this has left a bad taste in Bitcoiners' mouth because Bitcoiners don't like ICOs, and a lot of people don't like ICOs, and a lot of people in crypto have been burned by ICOs, right? Initial coin offerings, the idea that a company can come and offer up a token and raise a huge amount of money, and then give you the token on the promise of a future product. Now, we still see that to some extent, but it's become more popular to do that when the product is ready or launching, or some stage has already launched, which is definitely better, right? But this was the biggest ICO. There might be one exception, but I think this was the biggest ICO at $4 billion raised over the course of a year from June 2017 to June 2018. And that mostly went into Bitcoin. It was raised in Ether, like most ICOs. It mostly went into Bitcoin, which proved to be a smart financial move at the time relative to, you know, relative to other things, relative to like holding ETH. So Adam Back from Blockstream, his initial reaction to this Luna Foundation Guard news of buying Bitcoin was like comparing it to that. It was saying, man, well, they must be doing an ICO. They must be just like raising money from people or from venture funds and buying Bitcoin, you know, for themselves. And that's his like premise. That's his starting point. And it's the starting point, I think, of several Bitcoiners. Now, many of them, and this is immensely to their credit, people like Dan Held have just been on fire. You know, Dan Held's an old Bitcoiner. Not old, and like he's not an old guy, but old, you know, he's a known Bitcoiner. He's worked at Kraken for a long time. He's worked at other places for a long time. And he is very positive on this. Pompliano, of course, you know, think what you will of Pomp, but he's a huge Bitcoin podcaster, not at all a Bitcoin maximalist, but Bitcoin focused. And he's been really excited about this. And a lot of other people, including big Twitter accounts like the Bitcoin Archives and so on, have been really excited about this buy. But some people have been critical. And I think it's because of that bad taste in their mouths from like ICOs that went out and used little people's money to buy Bitcoin. And I'm not referring to any particular ICO with this statement. Okay. Just need to say that. ICOs went out and bought Bitcoin with little people's money, and that Bitcoin went to them and their investors, basically. They have a bad taste in their mouths for that, and understandably so. But this is different for a number of reasons. First of all, it's not going to the big investors' pockets. I mean, sure, it helps them out with the products they're running and so on, but it's going to a community like reserve fund. It's for all of us kind of thing, right? And second of all, it's not there to maybe develop a product in the future, but there isn't really a product yet, and we've raised billions of dollars, and we promise there's going to be a network in the future. No, the Terra network's already here now. It's already being used by hundreds of thousands, I don't know what the numbers are, hundreds of thousands of people now, and hundreds of apps and NFT projects and so on now. And this is now creating a stability reserve for that already thriving ecosystem. It's not raising a bunch of money on some promise of maybe we'll deliver a future project, right? So there's a lot of key differences, but I can understand with how badly people were burned and how notorious some of these ICOs were for what they did with the money, for how they disappeared, for how they did nothing, for you know, how they raised record amounts and then didn't deliver, right? I can understand the hostility. So I think when we approach some of the Bitcoiners that are feeling that like bad taste in their mouths, like this is another one of those, that we need to keep that perspective in mind as we like approach them. You know what I mean?
Do you think that with this experience that Bitcoiners have gone through, do you think that there is an inherent hurdle that we're going to have to get over with them, especially with like someone like Adam Bach? That guy is like, he's huge in the community. And before I was even into crypto, I was aware of him and his influence. And so like now that we're seeing kind of this debate come up to the forefront, I kind of wonder, what is it going to take for them to kind of trust what Terra Luna is doing and that the Luna model is doing? Is it going to be as simple as having a detailed outline plan for yield reserves? Is it just kind of, developing a forefront model on how to have on-chain reserves of Bitcoin? I genuinely do not know what is the adoption curve for all these people.
With the utmost respect for Adam Back and everything he's done, he invented a precursor to Bitcoin, right? He invented a digital cash. He didn't have all the pieces of Bitcoin together, but Bitcoin may not have happened without his precursor, right? And he's developed Blockstream and helped with a lot of Bitcoin adjacent products since then. With all utmost respect to him, people tend to not make decisions on topics they feel strongly about based on like outlines. I think that with some Bitcoiners, yeah, that are hostile, sure, they just don't know. And when they see the details, they'll have a light bulb moment. But some of those that are like vocally invested already in being against this, it might take a little bit more. It'll take time and like adoption. I mean, right now, I think his feeling is not really like this is EOS again. His feeling is that Terra is just generating money to buy Bitcoin in the same way that governments do when they print fiat to buy Bitcoin. And from a certain perspective, that's true, all right? The ecosystem is producing value. You know, it's going to take some time for him to see that as a good path forward, I think.
I saw a great tweet. I was trying to find it. I can't find it, unfortunately, but it was somebody that was just like pure sarcasm. And it was like, oh, look at me. I'm a billionaire running a Ponzi scheme. Oh, look at me. I'm going to buy all this Bitcoin. But before I do that, let me tell everybody exactly when I'm going to do it so they can front run me. And oh, look at this. I'm actually just going to take it and put it in a reserve so that everybody can go and use it and swap for it. And I just thought, like, I don't know. I was just dying because everybody's like so up in arms about the way he's doing it. But
if it was a scam and a publicity stunt, it was executed terribly.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, look how ridiculous you are to think like this is not, you know, a legitimate like course of action, and that you know, I guess you know, Do Kwon must have really been playing the long game to have not already amassed such wealth with Luna that he was like, oh, let me go also knock off the entire Bitcoin community before I really go out in a ball of flame. But anyway, I like Pete, I know you and I were talking back in like the fall. We were on a long ride and we were talking about like some of the primitives that can be built on top of Bitcoin, and like they don't necessarily exist. And we were looking around at a couple different projects that were being built, and considering like getting into that because we were very excited. You know, I think you and I are both like very pro Bitcoin. And it's just funny because like we've been in Terra Luna for a while now, and like it almost just happened. Like we didn't have to go anywhere. Like we were already home, you know, we were seeking that place for like, wow, what's going to be built? Like, when can we see things that are being built on in the Luna ecosystem be built on top of Bitcoin? Like that would be the ultimate thing. And it's like, it's kind of coming together, and I'm super excited about it. I just wanted to add a little bit about the actual like mechanism here, if I can, because I was reading the prop this morning, and just some overall info for people on kind of how it will work. And again, this is just the first iteration of like, you know, this is just the Agora post, and you know, I'm sure they'll be changing up certain aspects of it, but the basic gist of it is that there will be a pool of this BTC, and it'll allow at any point for someone to swap, say, like 98 cents. They'll be able to get 98 cents worth of BTC, so 98 US dollars worth of 98 cents of a US dollar of BTC for one UST. And that's not an exact number, like 98 is just the example, but if you think about what that does, right? If the UST was ever to then drop below that, so say it dropped to like, you know, 97 cents and it breaks off the US dollar peg, well then people would instantly just go and basically redeem at a gain into this pool. And so that would kind of drain that reserve of BTC, and then the reserve would start to gain, you know, UST, but it's basically a really hard backstop for people to come in and, you know, should UST ever for whatever reason dip below, you know, I think, and it's anyone retail as well. And it's just like Luna UST. And I think that's maybe one detail that gets lost in the shuffle. And, you know, it's going to be a virtual AMM, much like how the Luna and the UST one does, like with on-chain. But it'll be native BTC ported to Terra via Wormhole. And so basically, you know, wherever they decide or wherever the community decides that price point needs to be, and you know, there's bigger brains out there that can figure that out. That will be like a really, really hard backstop to go under, because at any point, anyone in retail, anyone at Jump, anyone at these big trading firms can come in and say, "Oh shit! Well, my one UST is now only worth 97 cents. Why don't we just trade, you know, a billion of it for, you know, redeem it for 98 cents worth of BTC?" And they're getting the hardest asset in the world, you know, inside or outside of crypto, in my opinion. And so, I think this is an amazing thing. I think it's going to be great. And then just another little detail, like on the flip side, in that same pool, you'll always be able to get one UST for $1 of BTC. So that'll always be one-to-one on the flip side. So should the peg break down and then recover, and then, you know, maybe that UST starts trading above peg, they would hope to replenish the pools with that. You know, now I'm going to go in and say I've got, you know, my UST is worth more. I could go back in and sort of start sending Bitcoin back into that pool to get some of that UST that's worth maybe like a dollar and a penny or something like that. So that's my high level explanation of what the mechanics are like. But again, go check out Donku. I'm sure he's working hard on like really diving into it.
Interesting, interesting game theory here. Like, let's say you are Jump and you're like, well, UST is at 97 cents. I'm going to put $1 billion, take $1 billion out, right? But, you know, if you have the confidence that institutions know that they can do that and that UST will return to peg as it has done before, then you might just not do that. You know, it kind of becomes a like, it's a circle, and I don't really know what the term for what I'm trying to say is, but a game theory, like a reinforcement circle, where like, yes, that option's there, but the fact that it's there makes us less likely to take advantage of it. So I think that, like, along with so many other things, community driven things like White Whale, I haven't really checked in on them in the past couple of weeks. I know that things have been developed, community driven things and demand driven things, and this is just yet another safeguard, another reason, another reason to have confidence in the UST price. We've got usage, we've got history through bear conditions and bull conditions. We've obviously got the core seniorage mechanism. We've got community products, and we've got demand, and now we've got the BTC reserve. So we're building more and more levels of confidence around the peg of UST here.
Let's hear Marty. Marty, what's up?
So, Sonny at Osmosis calls UST a fiat, and you kind of went there for a little bit. And let's just use that word for the moment. I think the distinguishment of UST as a sovereign, I'll use that word too, is unlike the other sovereigns out there, you know, Terra doesn't have immense amount of debt, and we don't go to war, right? Which is how fiat is basically used since the English fought the French. So, you know, we're really in a situation where we have, you know, this quasi or meta fiat with all its implications of having BTC as a reserve. It's a fantastic situation to be in. That's about it.
I think this is one of the reasons that Doe said, you know, that quote that I think was my main takeaway from his chat with Udi. Great chat. If you haven't heard it, go listen to it. It's a Spaces here. I'll try to find the tweet when I'm not talking. And so Doe and Udi were chatting, and Doe was saying, look, we used to have fiat on the gold standard. Now, that didn't mean that you went around and sent gold to people, you know, like actually handed people gold all the time. You had, initially it did, but then later you had the gold standard where you had paper money, sure, but it was backed by gold, and that was the confidence that you could go redeem it for gold, right? And so that this UST with a BTC reserve, a significant BT reserve, I'm going to say backing it, understand that's not collateral, but backing it, this is the first experiment in a true Bitcoin standard, was what Doe said. The Bitcoin standard, and he meant in the same way as a gold standard, where there was the confidence that you could go and redeem a dollar for some gold. Well, now there's the confidence that you can go and redeem UST for some Bitcoin. So the first great experiment in a Bitcoin standard, which I think is that like statement and that sentiment is one of the reasons that so many Bitcoiners are so excited about this idea. And yes, you're correct. It is fiat in a way. We can't, like, there's definitely a bunch of qualifications on that. Like, you can't go down with some Bitcoin or some Luna into your basement and print dollars. You know, like, it's a fiat that, but you have the people have ability to go and just make it themselves, you know, if they have the corresponding seniorage asset. So it's I guess we're breaking away from the original term, the original meaning of the word fiat, because by definition, you know, something that people can just go do for themselves is not by fiat. But you know, it does share some similarities, and I think that would be an interesting thought piece if somebody ever wants to tackle that, like the similarities and differences between traditional fiat currencies, fiat issuance with reserve backing, and UST and how it operates. Yeah, go ahead, Marty.
So, you know, the boomer here will tell you that from a historical perspective, the non-gold-backed U.S. dollar is only twice as old as the internet. It's sure. only four times older than Bitcoin. So it's not like this U.S. dollar fiat is this ancient thing. It's not that old. 1972. I won't tell you how old I was in 1972.
Yeah, you're right. It's an unprecedented experiment. We tried to make it the petrodollar, right? Good as gold for oil, which is no longer the case. Trying to string it along, and it's just getting weaker and weaker premise. Go ahead, Evan.
No. That's a good point. I think a lot of people, like even I do that, I'll be like, oh, let's compare, you know, the rise of the US dollar and how long it's been the world reserve currency. And you look back at like whatever date it was, you know, after World War One or whatever. But that's not true, right? It's a different dollar today than it was back then. And I think Marty brings up a great point there. And I wanted to bring up one other Do Kwon quote, which I thought Pete was going to say there in response to Marty's first point, which was it's like one of the best quotes to just summarize, I think, kind of the whole ethos of this whole like UST sort of craze. And it's, he says, the thesis of fiat money is violence. And our thesis is a protest against that violence. And I just think it's amazing. I think Bitcoin kind of has the same thesis as well, where it's like, you know, we don't have to be violent to make our money valuable because we figured out a way, like we almost like big brained it instead of like aping it. We big brained it and we don't have to be violent to, you know, start wars in the Middle East or for oil or. You know, get into these crazy geopolitical battles. And I think we are really living in like unbelievably unprecedented times, especially seeing, what's going on with like Russia and China and them kind of isolating themselves and, removing themselves from sort of the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. So, I don't know. It's very weird. I just feel like times are bigger than maybe people even realize. So it's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, Joseph, raise your hand. I see that. But when that was mentioned, right, that the US dollar isn't the same dollar as it was, I was thinking to myself, man, the US dollar isn't the same dollar it was 2 weeks ago. with oil now being oil deals being done in rupees and rubles and yen and Bitcoin potentially. With all kinds of companies all kinds of countries in that, the petrodollar thesis starts to really slip. Now, arguably, dollar hegemony is not really good for the U.S. I don't want to get into this really hard here, but in something like Dutch disease, it means that we can't compete on any other export because we export dollars so much to other countries that need them. So we outsource, basically it ends up where foreign entities and people own all our industry. And you've seen that. That's a really long discussion to explain all that. But basically, when there's dollar hegemony, we have to export so many dollars to countries that need them that we can't export anything else competitively. So we lose our competitive edge everywhere. So arguably, dollar hegemony is not great for the US. But it's something that the powers that be are like really want to hold on to. And one of the things is that they want to hold on to it for is because of this government monopoly on violence thesis, right? Like the government, its whole thesis is that it has a monopoly on violence. Evan can't come and shoot me and get away with it. But the government can come.
That's what you think.
Yeah, I know. But the government can come and shoot me or shoot Evan and get away with it. You know, if basically they can make me do whatever they want, whatever they tell me to do. And the alternative is to get shot, right? It's a monopoly on violence. They have the ability to do violence, and that's how they maintain order, whether it's legitimate order, like preventing Evan from shooting me, or whether it's illegitimate order. One of the ways they do that is with money. And like the dollar has been used since there is this dollar hegemony. The dollar is continually used, and especially in this Russia-Ukraine crisis now, is they attempt to use it as a weapon. So this is a currency, the dollar is a currency where if you hold it in a bank or you hold it, you know, in any form other than just like cash and under your mattress, it can be frozen, it can be taken, it can be like shadow taxed from you by inflation, right? The government can do all these things to you, to your balance, to your wealth. Even if you hold it as cash under your mattress, it can still be shadow taxed by inflation or by other measures, right? So we're, when Doe is talking about, we're protesting against that violence. Well, here is a form of the dollar. I know it's still pegged and there's questions around that, but like here's a form of stable currency, UST, that can't be seized from you as long as you hold it correctly. And it can be shadow taxed by inflation because the government, it's still pegged to the dollar, right? But it can't be like we can't, the Terra, like Terraform Labs isn't going to do that. And like, you know, whoever's running a certain validator on Terra can't go do that, right? So like all the people would have to vote on a proposal to do that directly. So like the idea is we're creating a money that doesn't run on that principle. It doesn't become a tool of violence. Now there's a lot of steps further to go. And I think that that sentiment that Doe has of we're creating UST as a protest against that violence continually gives us clues as to the direction he'll take this project or the direction he wants to shepherd and recommend this project go. And that Bitcoin reserves backing is just like another step in that plan to reaching a money that is super usable, super attractive, but also is inherently nonviolent. Anyway.
Wow. We're going deep today, Pete. I love these news bites like spaces. Because I feel like it's just me and you, like, bullshitting
at a
bar.
I think that's the point. Like the YouTube chats and Joseph's roundups and now Hank's roundups for NFTs they're the rundown. That's where you get the news points fast. But this is for discussion. Anyone else can come up and feel free to join as speaker and participate in this. Joseph.
I think you've already mentioned basically everything I was going to mention. I just enjoy being able to ask you guys questions because both of you guys are just wealths of knowledge and experience in the crypto sphere. So just to be able to engage with you guys and just to hear your thoughts and insights on these matters are just huge in general. But yeah, the only thing that I was going to propose or just bring up earlier was going to be the concept of countries starting to only accept Bitcoin as a form of a transactional currency for hard goods. And I've been seeing that whole concept of people that have been like challenging. Is that like there's been all those like Vitalik memes that have been going on. Is that crypto currently does not hold the goods, the world goods, and that there needs to be kind of like a transitionary phase where we're starting to use Bitcoin, we're starting to use assets, projects that are built on top of the value of Bitcoin to start kind of doing those transactions when we have countries that are purchasing oil. I know I've seen a lot of memes going around about how the moment that Russia just only accepts Bitcoin for oil, that will be the moment that Elizabeth Warren just tries to ban crypto entirely. So we're starting to kind of just see this kind of decentralization component play into the roles of how local legislation and just how governments in general are feeling about it. And of course, I mean, if you're in the United States and you're kind of pro the current financial institutions, you will do anything at all to kind of just stop it. So it's just kind of incredible just to kind of see that investing in this one little Luna coin is what is bringing the forefront of this discussion to everywhere. And now everyone who is anyone in crypto has heard about what this project is doing, either loosely or very intimately. But everyone is aware of this kind of the goals and the orientation of this reserve. Just really interested to kind of just see how it all works geopolitically with countries just starting to enforce things and stopping to enforce things entirely.
I think Warren is losing support, actually. I know that it, you know, she used to be more popular than she is now, I think. And it seems like maybe these are just filter bubbles in my Twitter sphere, and I'm just seeing like what people posting what they want to believe. But it seems like more and more people, even in Congress, are coming out with statements and thoughts and remarks that indicate that Warren's on the far left or right, or whatever you want to call it, of that position. Like she's extreme on that position. And I mean, sure, if Russia made a move to Bitcoin, that might politicize it more than we want. So I kind of hope they don't do that in too significant a way at this time, because like what we don't want is Bitcoin to become like the currency of traders, you know, or something like that. And if with significant moves, let's say Russia and China and I don't know, some other countries did that, like that might be make it more and more unpopular here. But I think right now the situation is that Warren is, the more she barks now, the more and more people tune her out and less they listen. I would have thought that the Biden executive order would be like aligned with Warren's positions, but it wasn't aligned with them at all.
Yeah. And I just want to kind of, I guess, keep the ball rolling here a little bit and change gears sort of, because I know, Joseph, one of the things we talked about was in the news roundup, you talked about, you know, Doe's kind of like, his tweet about where he said "die will die at my hand" or something like that, and I think on News Bites this week, like on YouTube, I coined the term like we will look at this moment in crypto inside of our little bubble, like of Web3 and you know crypto Twitter, and I think this is the stablecoin war era. I think people will look back on this era and say that was the stablecoin war, but I do think that after whatever happens here washes out, I do think there's going to be like much bigger fish to fry. And just to kind of loop it back to this broader conversation we're having, you know, the whole concept of like CBDCs and like even universal basic income. And I think a lot of people, they hear universal basic income and like they think, oh, like that's a great thing. You know, everybody should have money to kind of follow their passions. But there's always going to be like a string attached to that money that you get. And I think with CBDCs, it's going to be very easy for central governments to turn off the tap should you, you know, say something that's outside of the, you know, whatever their Overton window is, or say something that, you know, do something that purchase something that they don't agree with, or, you know, fund some campaign that's not necessarily aligned with the current regime. And so I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, like right now we're almost infighting between, you know, us and DAI, and like, you know, obviously those guys from Makers have been like flooding us for forever. And I think part of that reason is because they're losing a lot of market share and they're starting to, I don't know. And I don't want to speculate on that too much, but I do see a lot of these centralized stable coins, and especially Circle, in my opinion, they seem to be like very trying. They seem to be trying to very closely align themselves with whatever the CBDC plan is, whatever that rollout's going to be. And I think that's going to be really like the final, you know, climax to whatever happens here, where we see, you know, UST, decentralized stablecoin, backed by BTC, decentralized store of value, versus this centralized controlled CBDC that, I mean, I've seen articles that have said that they want to put a time limit on these CBDCs where you get issued, you know, whatever it is, your UBI, your paycheck, and it expires if you don't spend it in a certain amount of time. And that's their plan to, you know, stimulate the economy or something. So if that's a world you want to live in, I guess go for it. You know, you should start stacking up your Circle and your DAI now. but I think, you know, we're really on the precipice of like something that's going to be massive. Like I said, I don't want to keep repeating myself about that, but times are bigger than people realize, I think.
This is Cashron over here. I just want to say that Kevin is a giant macroeconomics junkie, and he's dying to be speaker to talk on this topic right now.
Well, tell him come up here. Where is he?
He's like an egg profile on here, man. His profile says Kevin Wang.
I just sent him an invite.
And this great. Is actually, let's have Kevin come up and talk. This will actually be a great segue too, because I think the other big piece of news that we haven't covered is the rate adjustment on Anchor.
And that actually is funny too, because when Marty said, you know, UST is becoming a fiat, it's like all of a sudden, you know, I'm not watching the FOMC to look for a rate adjustment. I'm watching like the anchor, the anchor Agora forum to like figure out what the rate adjustment's going to be. So it is funny in many ways. There are parallels there, but if we want to have them talk about, you know, Cash's proposal, because I think you guys have a really, really interesting model, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, where they're sort of combining like some buy pressure on the ANK token, and then also like helping that create some sustainability. I think it's actually a pretty genius model. Kevin, I see you're up here. Do you want to comment first on like sort of this broader macro conversation we're having? Is he here?
Kevin, you got to unmute yourself.
Hey guys, sorry about that. Clearly, you guys are seeing my non-tech tendencies now. This is somewhat embarrassing. So apologies. In terms of macro, like everything you guys have been commenting about, absolutely. Absolutely on the spot. It's part of the reason why I got into the crypto space, because of all the craziness that's going out there. I have a lot of comments about everything you guys have said, but fundamentally, you know, everything you've shared has been spot on. The one thing I do want to add is it's probably not as nefarious as you, like, as people say it is. I tend to believe in the fact that it's just simple economics and simple, everything is just driven by economics. And so a lot of the reasons why the governments want to maintain power through the fiat currencies, a lot of the reasons why, you know, central banks want to keep on issuing, you know, go down the CBDC route is just to keep kicking the can down the road. It's because the debt has ballooned to such a huge amount. This is pretty much the only way they can do it. And really at this level, the only way they can reduce that debt load is via massive inflation. Because as inflation grows stronger, like today, 7%, you can just sort of think of the debt, the total value of the debt reducing by 7% because they borrowed the money so long ago. And now they have to pay off after the value of the assets they've acquired or however they spent the money. That's just one thing I want to point out there, that they're really put into a corner. They're only doing this because it's really the only solution left once the debt load has grown to the massive amount it has.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that the idea that this is what they are economically incentivized to do, or in fact, economically required to do in order to preserve their position and their economic prosperity, at least for a time, and that this economic system like brought us to this point, those are just greater arguments. And these are the reasons we need to design like new economic systems that address some of these shortcomings. And yeah, we're never going to get it perfect. There are always going to be improvements, but as long as we're trying to improve the situation, right? So I agree with you. It's not like I'm not a huge conspiracy theorist. I think conspiracies, Kevin, you're typing quite loudly. Oh. Can you mute while you're typing? No worries.
Sorry about that.
I think I'm not a huge conspiracy theorist. I think that conspiracies can't really survive beyond a certain number of people. Someone's going to tell, you know, their wife on their deathbed or blow the whistle, you know, and there are conspiracies, sure. But I think they're generally known. And if the rich don't benefit from them, then that's even more evidence that they're not. They don't exist. But like, I don't think there's some cabal of like people that got together and planned all this out. It's just that economic forces have driven us this way. And we need to take that in mind as we build the next systems. But anyway, so yeah, just all that to say, I completely agree with you, Kevin.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a big part of the problem is the fact that since there was no other solution, everyone was forced to keep this song and dance going, right? And like, I think in the past decade, and then really in the past few years, now you actually have what I would consider to be true competing solutions and systems that can replace what we have. And so this is probably the first time where you actually have something that has scaled enough on a global basis, where a lot of people know about it, where maybe not everyone has access yet, but the fact that there is something out there that can replace what is currently available, this is probably the first time there's going to be a true turning point. Previously, whenever everyone talked about this, I would say like, hey, dude, like, yo, you know, if this all fails, what are you going to do? You got nothing to replace it. But now that people have options, you will slowly, I think, see this migration of folks from one end to the other. That was probably the last missing piece.
Let's have Joseph. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the prop? I think it was, what was it, Prop 20 on Anchor, and how that changed the interest rates. And then we could have Kevin maybe follow up on their perspective of how that impacts them, because, you know, Cash, a lot, I would imagine a big part of their pitch to their customers is like, hey, if you got a deposit with us, it's a 20% or whatever, you know, 19.5%, you know, savings account. And now that that's going to be a variable rate, curious to hear, you know, Cash's follow up from that. And then curious to hear, for those of us that are, haven't heard before, sort of your proposal and, you know, how you can, you know, make Anchor a more sustainable product. So Joseph, can you just give us the headline there?
Yeah, sure thing. So Anchor Prop 20 has passed with flying colors. The community has determined that this is going to be the next model we're moving forward with. And so specifically, I was a little hesitant to kind of reducing this rate. And the implications of the semi-dynamic model would essentially warrant a slow adjustment of the Anchor Earn yield. Depending on how much people are borrowing, depending on the yield reserve depletion rate, we will be seeing a fluctuation between that earn rate. So it is possible we will start seeing an upwards trend in anchor earn rates, but that would require positive positive directional movement on the yield reserve in terms of borrowing and in terms of replenishment. So this prop specifically will adjust the rate, and the most prevalent belief is that if we continue with the current yield reserves, we'll start seeing incremental decreases up to about 1.75%, and I believe that is the threshold that it can adjust to by every period. I believe that is the maximum, and this was only happened slowly. It wouldn't be an immediate 1.75% adjustment. It would happen through increments of several different, essentially just looking at what the yield reserve is at. So definitely, this model is kind of more focused on in terms of sustainability of the current model. And just trying to prevent from the yield reserve depleting. And I guess my whole issue and problem with understanding is that for me, from the very beginning perspective of Anchor model, I believe that with the money that Terraform Labs and LFG like kind of donated to the Anchor yield reserve, I personally felt that was a runway that was like kind of earned by them. They kind of bought us a runway. But I've kind of been opening up to the different kind of paradigm thought that the yield reserve is not something that you just kind of let bleed. I believe I'm starting to understand that the yield reserve is something more important, is something more essential, and that you have to take care of it. It has to be there. And so it's like a scarcity resource kind of thing. And so that this model, this specific prop at Prop 20 was focused on kind of preserving the yield reserve and kind of just trying to get it to last as long as possible. And so the new Cash proposal is going to kind of take us in a different direction. We're going to start focusing on how we can replenish this, ways that we can use the Anchor token to kind of do that and to flesh that out. I'm not going to butcher it any further. Let's pass it on to someone from the Cash team. Thank you guys so much for joining.
Hey, thanks so much, Joseph. In terms of our position on the dynamic earn rate, we think it's a great, it's actually pretty, it's pretty good, like just hands down, because we think it's a low risk way of trying to preserve the yield reserve. Do we think it will work over the longer term? That jury's still out, don't know. But but in terms of a short-term solution and in terms of the long-term health of Anchor, it's absolutely necessary. At some point, if it's not now, at some point in the future, some kind of dynamic earn rate will have to come in to balance out, you know, how much deposits are getting versus how much Anchor protocol is taking in from borrow. So it was inevitable. For some kind of proposal of this nature or some kind of solution of this nature to come into this ecosystem. We, as Cash, have always expected it. That's why when we wrote our proposal, we specifically stated, you know, 75% UST versus 25% Anchor, unless you hit a threshold and then it goes to 100% UST. We've always expected that the earn rate would turn dynamic in the future. We sort of didn't expect it to turn dynamic this fast, that's for sure, but we did expect some kind of the solution to come forth. Given that, I would say for cash was built to handle the variable nature of an interest rate. The business model was built so that if the interest rate does make an adjustment in Anchor, that adjustment will be reflected to all of our customers in the best way, shape, or form. So that is something that that is something Cash has built to handle. In terms of what our hope is from this proposal, we think, you know, our focus with our proposal is to really drive borrow demand. More than anything, when we look at how Anchor operates, our goal is to fix the other half of the equation, which is how do we get more borrowers into the system? Borrowers are fundamentally far more scarce. They have to commit so much more. The opportunity cost of being a borrower is high. If you don't know what you're doing, you take on a lot of additional risk. A lot of people sometimes aren't ready to handle it, especially if their collateral gets liquidated in times of high volatility. So finding borrowers that haven't been burned, finding borrowers that are willing to commit their precious capital, finding borrowers via Luna or ETH and now Avalanche tokens is very difficult. And so that's why we came up with the proposals we did to see, can we change the Anchor tokenomics to help drive additional borrow demand? Link the Anchor tokens to the total value of the deposit. So as deposits increase, the Anchor tokens naturally increase along with it, making borrowing far more attractive on Anchor than any other protocol.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit of a question there on the Anchor tokenomics part. I think for the longest time, the community has had that meme and that notion of the Anchor token just being basically another stablecoin offering. And so I want to hear a little bit on the breakdown of how both earn, the way that I understand the proposal is that the earn depositors and also borrowers are essentially working together to provide a floor price, with the earn side providing more of a floor price, and then with the borrow side being incentivized to kind of just keep accumulating a token that the earn side is helping provide a basis of pricing for. Is that correct in understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. The way we see it here is that it is, you know, that the ecosystem should work in sort of a triangle. Okay, right now the ecosystem sort of works in a line. And when I say a line, you have deposits on one side of the line and borrowers on the other. If we just break it down very simply in terms of, like, in the simplest form, you know, you deposit money for 20% return right now. In the future, it'll be slightly lower. But mainly the reason why you deposit is partly because of the high 20%, but mostly because of the stability and in many ways the guaranteed returns. For a borrowers typically are a little bit more, do it for more leverage, do it for tax reasons, do it because they're willing to accept the volatility in return for a higher ROI. So what we wanted to do then was add in the Anchor tokenomics to really address just what you said right there, Joseph, which is, hey, if the depositors can help generate high returns by propping up the Anchor tokens with a little bit of their earn, and ensuring that it sets a floor on what the Anchor token price will be, then when the borrowers start to borrow, what they do is they start buying into a more volatile part of Anchor, which is the token itself. And as the deposit goes up in price, the floor of the Anchor token keeps going up. In terms of selling pressure, we expect that, you know, there'll still be borrowers when they get Anchor tokens, they'll sell. So that's where the natural selling pressure will come from. But then there will be more borrowers who, when they get assigned and distributed Anchor rewards, to hold on to it because they want to continue riding the wave of increasing Anchor token. And so by adding in the Anchor token as a third peg, you move away from that line ecosystem to more of a triangle ecosystem.
Is there any concern? So I know earlier you mentioned how you guys expected some sort of dynamic model to come into play at some point, and that it was inevitable for the direction of the platform in general. I just wanted to see, is there any concerns for if the rate goes down for like the earn side with the depositors going down, that with the mechanism you guys are proposing, that would theoretically kind of just provide a consistent decrease in that floor price, because you would have, so like everyone on that earn side is getting paid out 5% in Anchor token. That 5%, that amount of total liquidity would kind of just be going down if people weren't depositing in the Anchor earn side. And that could be from a myriad of reasons. That could be just because there are better stablecoin farms somewhere else, or that the rate has just gotten so low that it's objectively just not worth some people's time to deposit there. But I mean, I know that's an ever moving goalpost, because I know that like back then people were saying that, oh, 20%, no one cares about 20%. It's not that important. When you can just get 1,000% on a Glow or on something, sorry if you're a part of the Glow team. But regardless, that's that whole concept. I just wanted to see if you guys have any concerns of just kind of decreasing earn depositors.
You actually bring up a great point. This was not something we had considered when we wrote up the initial proposal, because we expect the dynamic earn to come, but we didn't expect it so soon. And you're absolutely right. As part of our proposal, part of the reason why we believe the Anchor token floor price will increase, because it's, and just for all of you, just for all the listeners here, is that depositors in the mature state will buy Anchor tokens if the Anchor token prices do not appreciate 20% a year. So the earn rate is the minimum appreciation Anchor token price must increase by for depositors not to buy with our proposal. And as Joseph is saying, if the earn rate starts to go down, then the Anchor token price will not appreciate as much. I think in a mature state, that should be completely fine. Mm-hmm. In a mature state, that should be completely fine. Naturally, another way to drive borrow demand is by reducing borrow APR. And so as earn rate goes down, we expect that the borrow APR would naturally stay lower for longer. And thus, it in itself would help alleviate the need for Anchor token price to go up. So in one sense, yes, it does impact, Anchor tokenomics in terms of, hey, like the price just isn't going to go as much. But our expectation is that if the earn rate goes down, then the borrow APR can continue to stay low, just as it is now, or it won't go as high. So it still should drive some borrow demand.
So the way that I'm kind of understanding that is that at some point, assuming that the dynamic model rolls out and assuming that the cash proposal kind of rolls out, there would be kind of a symbiotic relationship between the two sides, and there would kind of be a theoretical agreed upon floor price for the Anchor token. Is that kind of the goal with this proposal, is to kind of like ease that and kind of just harness the existence of the Anchor token to just kind of give it that relationship between both sides of Anchor users?
Yes, that's actually I would say the tertiary goal. Our proposal is not meant to drive up the Anchor token. That's probably the furthest one away. Our goal is to drive one, borrow demand, and two, a sustainable long-term yield, because by keeping borrow demand high. So tertiarily, Anchor token, high Anchor token elevated price and a fantastic tokenomics for Anchor is the third and final goal.
Yeah.
So in this case, right, like we want Anchor ecosystem to be extremely healthy. And we see that only possible if, one, the depositors can continue to enjoy the stability of an interest rate. I think that's probably the most important. There's tons of my communities. The entire community have talked about for a while that they're willing to accept lower earned, and voting on this proposal continues to show everyone that the community is more than willing to accept a lower earn for a sustainable anchor. And then for, you know, and then for us, it's all about driving borrowed demand so that the anchor rate, the anchor earn rate doesn't drop too low. And then the anchor tokenomics is the avenue we chose to really hopefully drive additional borrowed demand.
Yeah, just leading on from that, Kevin, as well. Just going back to what you were saying, Joseph, about there like a symbiotic relationship between the dynamic earn and the proposal that Cash has put forward. I think the dynamic earn rate, it has come pretty suddenly. I think all of us didn't expect it to happen this soon, especially with such a large buffer on the yield reserve left. I think the Cash proposal maybe going in first might have helped out, might have been better. The ordering might have been better because, as Kevin just said, our goal is to keep the earn APY as high as possible by increasing borrower incentives, whereas it feels like the dynamic earn rate is kind of, they're reducing the earn rate first and then they're going to see if they can increase borrower demand, which seems a bit counterintuitive. But I think in the end, like you say, both will work out nicely together.
Have you guys had any feedback from anyone internally at the anchor team on your proposal? I'm just curious because it did seem like you guys sort of had proposals go out at the same time and there were mechanics that didn't quite play well with each other. So I just want to know what's, if you've had a dialogue with them yet.
Nate from the anchor team has he's commented quite a lot on the forum post on the proposal, and he did say that further down the line something like this will be looked at. It's more they want to get the dynamic rate in first, then look at pushing in the VE tokenomics for anchor governance, which I'm sure Kevin can give you some reasons on why he's not a big fan of that, and then he can get to our Cash's proposal.
And then we did speak to them before this, tossed around a few ideas in terms of what makes sense. But we never got into a discussion at that point in time about, hey, if we went through with all the proposals, what would be the best order? So that was probably something we should have talked about then. But in terms of discussions, Cash Ron is the one who mainly keeps in touch with the anchor team to coordinate everything.
Yeah. So, Kevin, you want to talk about kind of your thoughts on the VE tokenomics and, you know, how that might interface well or not well with the Terralytics proposal?
So I'm very mixed on VE. I'm actually still more on the fence of a no. I think it works great for Curve. It just makes sense because of the way they built things. Anchor is first and foremost a savings protocol. And then second for lending and borrowing for those who want to deposit assets. So I don't know if VE works here. If we take a look at borrowers in terms of locking up anchor tokens, I mean, like it's the fundamentally, most people take anchor tokens, sell them to get UST. You get the UST, you can use it to pay down your loan, your borrow. You can use it to buy more Luna. And then now you're trying to lock it up so that you reduce selling demand. The way I think about it is the fact that you lock up the token and all you've done is you just push sell demand up to the point when the unlock happens. And so it just becomes a big game in terms of, hey, when does the first unlock happen? And when that happens, is it just built up sell demand that would have naturally occurred over a period of time and now all funneled into one single moment? So that's the first thing. The second thing is a lot of folks and a lot of my friends who use Anchor, during the past time when things were volatile, they started selling off all their Anchor holdings to help prevent liquidation. As they bonded more Luna, as they put up more assets, Anchor tokens was another source of cheap funding. It wasn't the best funding given how fast the price fell from $4 to $1 or $1.50. But they saw it as a liquidation buffer. And so those are all components of how Anchor tokens are used today. And locking it up, I don't see how that fixes the tokenomics issue because fundamentally, right, just, you know, what you don't, I don't think an ecosystem should be developed where you're locking up tokens to prevent selling. Rather, you want to create more incentives for people to buy. Or you want to create more incentives for creating price stability, or you want to create more incentives for other types of transactions. So those are my thoughts on VE tokenomics. I know there's a heavy discussion in the Anchor forums. I haven't been keeping us as much as I want, unfortunately. But on the flip side, right? Like if you now let me talk about the flip side. On the flip side, like if you do lock up the Anchor tokens, you do remove a lot of selling pressure. That in turn could boost borrowing in the short term. So I don't doubt that. It could buy a lot more time. I'm not, that's also a possibility. So I'm not going to argue on that. And that's why part of me is on the fence. But over the long term, I just don't think it's as sustainable, especially when the first unlock finally hits.
Yeah, obviously, definitely a lot of different moving pieces going on with Anchor. Certainly the primary focus of just about everybody in the ecosystem over here in Terra Luna world. Kevin and Cash Ron and Cash Hurley. Cash Hurley, I have to apologize to you. I was so rude to you on the YouTube stream, but it was all Cash Ron's fault. So
it's absolutely not a problem, mate. Yeah, thank you so much for having us on. If you don't mind, we do like to do a little bit of promoting.
Plug away.
Thank you very much. First off, we are hosting weekly office hours on Twitter Spaces. It's 11:30 a.m. EST on Fridays, which is 3:30 p.m. UTC. Come in, me and Ron will answer all your questions on Cash or just to talk about general stuff to do with Terra. That's the first thing. And then second thing is, I'm assuming everyone knows it. If you don't, Cash is now live in the US. You can deposit directly onto your Cash wallet using ACH and it'll be there and you can do all that good stuff. Debit cards coming soon, TM. And then launch to the rest of the world coming soon after as well. So yeah, thanks a lot for having us on, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining. We appreciate it. I do think we're going to probably wrap it up here. Appreciate everybody for stopping by. We do this every week, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. It is some combination of myself, Pete, who's in the Terabytes account right now, Joseph, or as we like to call him, Casa Intern. We cover the news, but we also, as you can tell, go off the rails. And usually we're talking about like geopolitical history and forces of nature and crazy stuff like that. So just wanted to remind everybody about the Terra Dapp Expo that is going on June 9th and 10th. Orbital Command has done a lot of awesome work behind the scenes as well as TFI Alpha. I see my boy Ryan Ola in the chat here. Ryan Ola, an unsung hero of Terra Luna. He like works his ass off, always on calls, putting shit together. So we're going to kill it down there in Texas. I'm going to have my cowboy hat on. We're going to be on stage. There's so much alpha already. Like it's crazy. It's going to be the night of your life. So forget about your wedding night. Forget about the birth of your first child. Just focus on 6/9. Just focus on 6/9, June 9th this year. It's going to be the best night of your life. Pete, you want to take us out?
Yeah, that is going to be an incredible event. I had several people reach out to me today saying, hey, you're going to be in Consensus. You're going to be in Consensus. So I was like, no way, but I'm going to be at Terra Dapp Expo and showed it to them. And we might see some old hands coming around from other ecosystems. So excited about that. If you haven't got enough of Spaces for today, head over. Seffy and Westy, and looks like Karma and some others are over in L1 Tokenomics Terra versus ADA or Terra versus Cardano Spaces going on right now, suspiciously scheduled the same time as our Spaces. But I'm sure it's great discussion over there. Hop over there. And we will see you guys next time, 11 a.m. Saturday. You can also join us at our Monday or Tuesday news video stream, and as always, check out our regular interview videos and so on. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Terabytes Weekend News, recorded on Saturday, March 26, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date date with all the glowing projects and check them out online at glowyield.com. This episode of the Ether was also brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. They say rapping is the gateway, bringing home great pay. Checking that replay, sing along and we say nobody gives a fuck around my way. I make about $3 for every 1,000 plays, so add it up and do the math on that. Financially speaking, why the fuck would anybody wanna rap? But in this reality, the money comes from doing shows. But then where's the money go when you can't do the shows? I guess you could rap on Cameo. I've been asking all my friends if I can rap on the patio. 6 feet, motherfucker, step the fuck back. Doing a little magic, pulling rabbits out the rucksack. Not everybody's always in it for the money. Looking like another crooked Sunday and I'm working Monday. So you know I ain't stressing, left debating great methods. Amazed to play Inception, the bass stay blessed.
See, even with these huge sums of overall royalties, huge sums of money that go to the record label per playback can seem insultingly small. Many rights holders are making around three quarters of a cent each time someone listens to one of their tracks, leaving only some portion of that for the actual artist. They're making pennies per play. Until they can figure out how to turn a profit, their future will always be in question. But for now, investors see enough potential to continue to fund pennies per play.
Another day, another lesson. Living in the eighth dimension might be worth a little mention. Living in the Great Depression, got a real regal feel. Reeling in another sucker fish out to make a deal, just to make a motherfucker wish. Aw shit, now you only got two left. You know what I wish? We didn't have any loose ends. You know what I miss? Listening to excuses. Now we're on the fence like we forgot how to choose. That's what happens when people don't know what's true. In the dark, eating bullshit up like a mushroom. In the lunchroom, just trying to laugh it off. Meanwhile, foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog. Like a fake mating call at the zoo. It's looking like the view is getting disappointed too. I'm working on the new shit, trying to produce it. It's what I'm willing to go through when I'm making my music.
Spaces.